Hi, everyone. Welcome to our podcast on an inside look of rape culture in a small town called Missoula. I mean, everyone that is listening should know where that is. If you don't, I'm not sure where you've been living for the past 18 years. But anyways, this is your hosts, Bridget, Kylie, and Jillian, and we thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. This is your host, Bridget, and I'll be starting us off. So I'll just jump right into things. As I mentioned, this podcast is on rape and how serious it is. This book talks about what it's like in a college town and lets you feel on a personal level what some students went through. You can get an inside look on how it affects someone and the process a victim must go through in order to win their case. If this has happened to you or a friend, make sure you speak out. It's important that an individual speaks out on something this serious. I personally know a few people this has happened to, and it's obviously not an easy topic to talk about. That's why we're talking about it. I honestly had no idea what one must go through or the feelings they had the day after this happens. It's almost like being at the lowest point in your life. This podcast isn't meant to scare you. It's meant to help others be aware of what happens, especially being a girl. Not that this doesn't happen to guys, but it's just easier to take advantage of girls. This is also not saying that some girls don't make up being raped. After reading this book, cops thoroughly question you. A really common question they ask is, do you have a boyfriend? This is helpful information to a cop because some girls want to ruin someone else's life and get back at their boyfriend or say that they raped them. Nonetheless, none of these stories are about that. But again, this is supposed to inform and let these girls have a voice on what happened to them. All of these different events occurred at parties, not saying that this can't happen in other situations, but a lot of them happened when people weren't thinking clearly or were under the influence. And what's really crazy to me is that this book is where we live, and a lot of these events weren't that long ago. Most of them took place in the early 2000s. And this is just a major topic that needs to be talked about, whether you're going to college or not. Rape is a big problem throughout the United States, and speaking out will hopefully stop it from happening to someone else. Hopefully, someone else speaking out will make someone else second think what they're about to do and make sure that they have their consent. Getting consent is always making sure the other individual is comfortable with what is happening. And this is a must. I can't emphasize that anymore because that's how some people get themselves into bad situations, whether they are or aren't consensually having sex. Either way, it's not okay unless you have their consent. A lot of the time, girls in these cases were in too much of a shock to do anything about the person raping them. Some of the victims are scared they might get hurt by them if they tell them to stop, or are too mortified to move and will just wait till it's over. After hearing a lot of these stories, it makes me feel like I was almost going through what happened with them too. I think John Krakauer, the author of the book, Missoula, did an amazing job of making it seem like you're going through it with them. Not saying that I wanted to go through it with them, but he went over the event very thoroughly. Even though this is horribly graphic, it allowed you to understand what the person went through and the feelings they had after it happened. We obviously won't go into as much detail, but more so just tell you what happened. In mostly all of these cases, it just leaves them in a depressed state, and many of the stories people didn't say anything about until years later. Some would rather shelter themselves, or others would do just the opposite and go out having sex with lots of people to help try and forget what they experienced. Some were unwilling to speak out because they didn't want to ruin the lives of the person who had raped them. They either didn't know the individual and felt bad in some way, or they were a close friend. Such as the Bo Donaldson and Allison Huget case. We'll go into that a little bit, but I'll give you a little bit of a background on this case before we get into it. So Allison and Beau grew up together in Missoula. They had been going to school together since the second grade and were very close friends, but they were always just friends, nothing more. Allison thought of Beau like a brother and felt safe with him. Beau, too, also said that he thought of Allison as a sister. But this kind of just goes to show you that you never know who you can trust, no matter how close you think you know them, or how close you guys are. All of this might have not happened if they hadn't been drinking, but nonetheless, we don't know that. A lot of different rapes happened in the early 2000s, and this is just one of the major cases that happened in Missoula. But now that I've given you a little bit of a background on the book, I'll have Kylie share the case on what really happened with the rape of Allison Huguet.
Hi, this is one of your hosts, Kylie McKittrick, and like Bridget said, our podcast is based on Missoula, Rape and the Justice System in a Small College Town by John Krakauer. In this book, John Krakauer discusses many real-life stories of rape that happened right here in Missoula, Montana, and today I'm going to be talking to you about the main stories that he touched upon in the book. The first story I'm going to talk about is the story of Beau Donaldson, which is one that you have probably heard of before. Beau Donaldson was a football player for the Grizzlies at the University of Montana, and he was accused of raping Allison Huguet in September of 2010. Beau and Allison were friends for 12 years before the incident occurred. They went to high school together at Big Sky High School in Missoula, Montana, and they had a very good brother-sister relationship as the book described. The night the incident happened, she attended a party at Beau's house. Allison, who was back in town from attending school at Eastern Oregon University on a track and field scholarship, was having fun being back in town and seeing old friends she hadn't seen in a long time. There was drinking involved, so Allison decided to sleep on the couch in Beau's living room just to be safe. She felt safe in that house and trusted Beau, so she didn't think anything bad would happen or take place that night. But she was wrong. She wakes up about 2 hours later, and without going into detail, and to put it simply, Beau rapes her. Allison is scared to death, grabs her things, and calls her mom as she's running out the door. Beau even begins chasing Allison down the alley, but eventually stops, and Allison's mom picks her up and takes her to the hospital. Later, Allison is actually able to get Beau's confession on tape. He admitted to taking advantage of her. She said that she wouldn't go to the police if Beau gets help for all the problems that he has with drugs and drinking. When he failed to do that, she went to the police on December 16, 2011 with the confession, and after the police interviewed many people, including Allison herself, Beau, and Keely Williams, a witness that was there the night of the incident, he was arrested. The police even got him to confess again. Beau pleaded guilty in court, so Sean Donovan, who is in charge of prosecuting Allison's case, suggests a lenient punishment. Allison is not having it. She wants him to go to the state penitentiary. She thinks that that is a fair punishment due to the pain and suffering that he had caused her. On January 11, 2014, Beau's hearing begins, and people begin to testify for Allison, including Allison herself, her parents, Keely Williams, Hillary McLaughlin, a second girl Beau actually raped in 2008, and Katie Burton, who was a prosecutor in the county attorney's office. When Allison was called to the stand, she encounters what happened that night and how much it has affected her emotionally. She lives with anxiety and nightmares. After Allison's witnesses testified, people came up to defend Beau, including Beau's high school football coach, employer, his dad, and Beau himself. Everyone tells the court that Beau is a great person and how this act is so out of character for him, hoping that the testimony will help give him a lighter sentence. When Beau testifies, he apologizes for everything and the harm that he had caused Allison and her family. After Beau testifies, the lawyers give their closing statements. Fred Van Valkenburg, defending Allison Huguette, says that the punishment of 30 years, with 20 suspended in the state penitentiary, is a reasonable punishment for Bo's actions. Then Miltisopoulos gives his closing statements, recommending that Bo be given 5 years at the Department of Corrections, which would result in his being incarcerated for six months to a year. The judge agrees with Van Valkenburg and gives Bo 30 years with 20 years suspended in the state prison. He will be eligible for parole in 2 years. After he got out of jail, he violated his parole by drinking on numerous occasions, being found in bars, having a smartphone, using social media, and lying to his supervising officers. Despite all these violations, the judge couldn't send him back to prison because of a new state law. So as of today, he is out of jail and living his life. Hi, welcome back. I hope you are enjoying our podcast so far. The final case I'm going to talk about is the case of Jordan Johnson. This was one of the biggest cases that happened in Missoula, Montana, so I'm sure most of you have already heard of it. But here it goes anyway. It all started in early 2012, when Cecilia Washburn and Jordan Johnson began texting and hanging out together. But on the night of February 3rd, that all changed. On that night, Johnson and Washburn were watching a movie in Washburn's room, while Washburn's roommate was playing video games next door in the living room. They began kissing, but Washburn didn't want it to go further than that. Without going into detail, she was raped that night. After the incident happened, Washburn quickly sent a text to her roommate out in the living room that said that she thought she might have been raped. Washburn got out of the room as fast as she could and drove Johnson home because she wanted him out of there as soon as possible. Out in the living room, Washburn's roommate was playing video games, like I said, and is quoted in saying that Washburn looked very distraught and was crying. On February 5th, 2 days later, her friend took her to the hospital, and Washburn decided to report the incident to the University of Montana, but not the police. A week later, Johnson is informed that he is under investigation for violating the UM Student Conduct Code section that prohibits rape. Also, Washburn files a restraining order against him after she has experienced severe panic attacks from seeing him across campus. Johnson's attorney, David Paoli, argues that the investigation was biased, and since the Student Conduct Code hadn't been updated to say that a preponderance of evidence is needed to find a student in violation, the old clear and convincing evidence standards should be followed. At the end of March, Dean Couture sends Jordan Johnson a letter telling him that the university has found evidence that he is guilty. Johnson appeals the charge and has an administrative conference with the next highest authority at the university, Vice President of the Student Affairs, Teresa Branch. Branch is unconvinced and denies Johnson's appeal. Johnson appeals to the university court. The university court finds Johnson guilty and votes to expel him from the university. Paoli appeals to the Montana Commissioner of Higher Education and the Board of Regents. They order that the university reopen the investigation into Johnson using clear and convincing evidence standard in the conduct code, and Johnson is found not guilty. Washburn is not able to appeal this decision. Because of this, Washburn reports the incident to the police, and his trial begins on February 11, 2013. Kristen Papps, the prosecutor on the case, describes Johnson as a polite young man, and she describes Washburn as a distressed child who has a history of panic attacks, being bullied, and depression, who was only seeking attention by accusing Johnson of rape, and how Johnson did not rape her. It was all consensual. People then begin to take the stand, and Washburn starts by encountering what happened that night of the incident. She does admit that she could have been clearer in saying no that night. Another person who took the stand is Dr. David Lisiak to talk about the common misconceptions about rape and the fact that victims often blame themselves for what happened. They are confused. Other people that testified were Stephen Green, Washburn's roommate, and Claire Frencore, the nurse practitioner that examined Cecilia Washburn to say what they observed about what happened that night. Johnson's witnesses all say that Johnson is a good guy, and how he is very respectful and humble. Johnson testifies and denies the allegations of raping and harming Washburn in any way, and that she was enjoying what was happening that night. After all the testimony, the lawyers make closing statements. Susie Boylan says that Johnson left two kinds of marks on Washburn, physical and psychological. Though Johnson may be a decent young man, he committed a crime and deserves to be punished. Paoli explains the text message Washburn sent to her roommate after the incident in which he thinks she may have been raped. He states that if Washburn didn't know if she had granted consent, how could Johnson have known? That was his main argument to defend Johnson in this case. After the jury deliberated, they declared Johnson to be not guilty of raping Washburn, and fans of the Grizz immediately showed support for Johnson. After the trial, Joanne Fargo, one of the seven women in the jury, tells Krakauer about the deliberation process. She thinks that Johnson might have raped Washburn that night, but she also thinks the defense raised reasonable doubts about whether Johnson was aware that the sex was non-consensual. She said that Johnson's claim that Washburn moaned and the fact that Washburn could have done more to make it stop had an impact on the jury and swayed their decision. She also said that Washburn's text that night had also helped sway their decision to declare Johnson not guilty. In conclusion, Missoula, rape, and the justice system in a small college town was a very educational and eye-opening book for me to read. I learned so much and became more aware of this serious crime. There are so many different cases that were talked about in the book, and to be completely honest, as I was reading it, I was filled with anger about how the cases were handled and how the victims were treated. This book proved that the crime can happen to anyone at any time. It also showed why victims are reluctant to report that they had been raped in the first place, because the victims often feel like it was all their fault to begin with, mainly because they were told that they drink too much, and if alcohol wasn't part of the equation, it definitely wouldn't have happened. That is like a slap in the face to the victims. People need to be more empathetic and understand that when something like this happens to someone, it never escapes them, and it needs to be taken seriously. The victims are scarred for life, and they won't ever totally heal from the experience they endured. The main thing I learned from this book is that the justice system needs to do a better job in handling cases like this. If you ask me, Bo Donaldson and Jordan Johnson got off easy given the harm that they caused to the victims and their families. Another thing I learned from this book is that you can't trust anyone, no matter how long you've known them. Look at Allison Huguette. She knew Bo Donaldson for 12 years. She thought that if something bad happened to her, Bo Donaldson would be the one to protect her, but he was the one that caused the harm. People should always have their guard up, be safe, and make smart decisions about who they hang out with and what they do with that person. It is better to be safe than sorry. I would definitely recommend this book to anyone, but especially teenagers. In my opinion, it is very interesting and it helps bring awareness to an important issue. Yes, it is a sensitive topic, but I think the more we talk about it, we will end the stigma and work together to end the issue as a whole. I also think that this book will spark some inspiration for the people that have experienced this issue to come forward and get some justice for what happened to them. From this book, I learned that coming forward is hard and scary, but it is also very brave and courageous. You might just be helping somebody else decide whether or not to come forward, which is a pretty amazing thing to think about. I've also learned that once you do come forward, the start of the healing process begins, and that is the first step to getting the help that you need. I hope that this issue will come to an end someday and become something that people don't have to worry about anymore, because absolutely no one deserves that kind of pain the victims in the book go through and around the world go through every day.
So before we get into things, me and Jillian want to talk a little bit about the cases. The first one being the Bo Donaldson case. I just was confused on why someone would do this to their career and would jeopardize his future over doing this to someone. It just seems like he wasn't really worried about it after and kept denying that he didn't do it and didn't really feel sorry, I guess. about the situation afterwards, even though he knew that Allison was hurting from it. He just kept apologizing, and I just feel like that doesn't really justify what, or like redeem himself, I guess, from what he did. Jillian, do you have any words on this?
I think what both cases, just not Bo Donaldson, is very disturbing, and I don't understand what goes through really anyone's mind, not just guys, to be able to do that to someone and know that you've hurt them, and really just like traumatize them for the rest of their lives, because it's something that they're gonna have to live with. And yeah, it's just very disturbing and
exactly
disgusting to think about that this happens all the time, everywhere.
Yeah, and I think it's just crazy that, going back to the Bo Donaldson case, that he would think of Allison like a sister, but I'm confused on why he would say that but do that to someone he's that close with. It's just mind-blowing, I guess, to me that someone could do that to someone they're that close to. I can't even imagine what Allison went through to... I feel like it'd just be so weird to have someone almost like a brother to you doing that to you, and then trying to make things normal, and your family talks about him, and then you go to his games and they talk about him and they're like, oh, you're being weird and stuff. And it's just strange to me that someone could do this. But me and Jillian just thought that we'd talk a little bit about the cases before we jump right into the interviews.
Next, you will hear Tegan Scopper and Olivia Jenkinson, two students at Sentinel High School, who have read Missoula, Rape in a Small College Town by John Krakauer, and they will be talking to you guys about their opinions on the book as a whole.
So, what are your guys' thoughts on the book? Do you have any, like...
what are your
strongly opinionated things towards what John Krakauer talks about?
All right, yeah. So the book Missoula, most people probably have the idea that it's about sexual assault on the UM campus within Missoula. And personally, the author, John Krakauer, is really, really talented and skilled in how he writes. He's really knowledgeable about what he's saying, but my personal opinion on the book was that he didn't have enough counter arguments to validate his arguments, but I mainly just disliked the book because of the harm that it placed upon the U of M and their decrease in education funding for specific, I guess, programs, as well as it showed that the U of M didn't really support their students until now, and now that they are, they're not going to be able to see or reap the benefits that they should because of this book, which is the only issue that I really have with it.
I think for the exact opposite reasons that it's a really good book, I think that John Krakauer enlightened a lot about what rape culture is on college campuses, and while it might have negatively impacted the UM, I also think that it increased their awareness, and since they're under such a large microscope now, every action that they do is being judged, and so it's holding them accountable for their actions. And I think it also made the police department in Missoula much more accountable for their actions, because in the book, John Krakauer talks about how corrupt, essentially, the Missoula Police Department is, and biased towards men, not the victims, but the perpetrators. And so I think that that really just painted them in a negative light, which made them have to become more positive
and accountable for what they did, definitely to the victims that they essentially shamed.
And manipulated.
Extremely.
Okay, thank you guys.
Now we are interviewing Mrs. Rott, who is a teacher at Sentinel High School, who has read the book Missoula by John Krakauer. What are your opinions on the book?
So many opinions. My first opinion about the book is I think it's a great book for students who are about to go to college to read, both males and females, because it really gives you a dramatic view of what college rape culture can be like. And so I really love it when my senior girls choose it to read, because I think that it opens their eyes to not that college rape culture is it's pretty prevalent. You can stay out of it, but this, I think, is a good educational book to teach you how to keep away from situations that might cause you to be in that place. So I think it's an important book to read. I think it would be really important book for boys to read, too, because I think boys are just as important as girls in stopping college rape culture. So when a boy reads it, they think, oh, criminy, I should get ask consent before I do these things. And oh my gosh, if I see a friend of mine who's a girl in a bad situation, I need to step in and get her out of that situation or help her get out of that situation because I can put a stop to, I can help. Like, it's going to take everybody to help stop college rape culture. And this book really puts it on the table for you to think about that. Should we pause? Interesting to think about how graphic it is and how he intended to make it so graphic. Krakauer intended to make it graphic because he thought, well, if you can't handle reading a book, imagine how difficult it is for a woman who has to be raped and then try to work her way through the system and not be believed and all those things. And so he intentionally made it as graphic so the book feels like an assault when you're reading it sometimes. Other things that are interesting about this book, it's interesting because you guys probably are friends with some of the people that this book is about, like our lead county attorney, and I can't remember her name. Do you guys remember her name? Is really portrayed horribly in this book.
Kristen Pax.
Yeah. And her children all went to Sentinel. And so I know her kids. And so I think the other thing that's really interesting about this book is that Krakauer tells a truth. But he definitely chooses one set side of that truth to tell. Like he tells you know what I mean? Had he interviewed Kristen Pabst, we would have had a different version of the truth. And so some people are really, really horribly offended by this book because if you knew Kristen Pabst very well, you'd realize she's not a terrible person. I mean, maybe nothing he says about her is untrue, but he definitely spins it in such a way and only picks the things about her that are pretty negative. And so I just think it's really interesting that when you read things like this that are nonfiction books, you have to realize that this is definitely a version of the truth, but every event, every truth probably has different sides that you could look at it from. So that's kind of interesting too. And you get some of that in this book because, you know, you get Jordan Johnson saying that I didn't do it versus, I mean, definitely the whole book is about different versions of the truth. And so, yeah, I think it's a super interesting book, but it's a really interesting book for we people in Missoula who are like, wow, that's my neighbor that he's talking about so badly, or that's my neighbor who was assaulted by this guy. And it's super good because any nonfiction book you'd read, you can realize that if it's about a real person, there's somebody who knows them and is their neighbor and all those kinds of things. So that brings that reality home to us in this book in an interesting way. So.
Hi. This is Jillian Matisich. I'm doing a podcast about John Krakauer's book Missoula about rape and college in a college town. I'm interviewing SRO of Sentinel High School, Mark Monaco, and I have a couple of questions to ask him. Have you ever read the book before?
No, I have not read the book, but I have a copy, and I kind of know what it's about.
Do you know a lot about the situations in the book, Missoula, or what happened at the university?
I know that there was a case that's already been adjudicated, reference rape, and between university students, and none of the incidents affected me at all directly, but it affected the City of Missoula Police Department and how we handle rapes in today's society, rape investigations.
Could you explain your opinion on things were how things were handled or are handled in general in any sort of case like this?
In
the process someone has to go through?
I can't speak for how the case was handled because I have not read the case. Can you repeat the last part again?
Or like the process someone has to go through.
For reporting a case?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the process, there's the way that the law enforcement will investigate and write our reports on a case of sexual abuse is completely different than we used to prior to this. So I believe that there's always good things that come out of bad things. The good thing for this is that we're able now to ask the same type of questions, but in a way that is softer, I guess, to the victims, because we're there to help them. And so it's a process. It's a multi-tiered process, I guess. I'm not doing it justice, but hold on a sec. So let me start over. You can use what I've already written but basically it's a process multiple supervisors will read to make sure that crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's. First step usually gets involved, for a forensic interview. For the reporting part, we write it up and we gather information, and the police department or whoever the investigators are, and we just take it step by step. And if there's probable cause for an arrest, we make an arrest, and that's when the attorneys get involved. So the county attorneys will get involved at that point. So it's a basic process. When you have a victim and you have a suspect, and it's just that the way that we investigate sexual assault cases are completely different than we used to handle. And I know that really doesn't answer your question, does it? But
that's okay.
Okay.
I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
Our next interview will be Mr. Fisher, the sociology criminology teacher at Sentinel High School, and he is going to be telling you about his opinion on this important issue.
Have you ever read the book before?
I have not read the book from the author, although I am fairly familiar with the situation, for sure.
That kind of answers my second question.
you can ask that again.
Do you know a lot about the situations in the book, Missoula, or what happened at the university?
I am fairly aware about response and prosecution for victims of sexual abuse historically in Missoula, and that comes primarily from my time as a sociology criminology teacher, where I have had the opportunity to meet a number of people in leadership at the Missoula Police Department, as well as a number of detectives. So I was quite surprised at some of the claims that I read that the author made about, in particular, the way the Missoula Police Department dealt with sexual assault.
Okay, And then if you could just explain your opinion on how things were handled or how they are handled in general just nowadays.
Certainly. First of all, I would say what happened at the University of Montana, the Missoula Police Department, and with the Missoula Prosecutor's Office, although dealing with a terrible situation, has led to tremendous improvement with the way sexual assaults are treated at both the city level, the county level, as well as the University of Montana. In defense of the University of Montana, I would say that this problem, it was clearly established in the media that sexual assault was a problem at nearly every college and university in the United States of America, small and big, and some of the stories about how coaches, athletic directors, and other college administrators essentially whitewashed the situation is very disturbing. I think what's good for the University of Montana and the Missoula Police Department is now the Missoula Police Department will do the majority of the investigations, and they've really changed their approach to a victim-centered approach, which includes, first of all, a trauma-informed investigation, in that detectives with the Missoula Police Department are now highly trained in recognizing the aspects of a person who is suffering from PTSD from the most terrible crime that you can live through. Secondly, it's victim-centered, so the victim now will call the shots in terms of whether, and again, 98% of the victims are female, but she would be able to call the shots. Perhaps she just wants to report it, and maybe that helps with therapy. Secondly, the Missoula Police Department and the university will subscribe to a victim-centered investigation, and really it's the victim who will make nearly 100% of the shots, call 100% of the shots, whether it is a victim, again, 98% female, who wants to push it all the way and go for prosecution, or if perhaps the victim just simply needs to have an opportunity to express what happened then to them. And last but not least, I think the biggest change is the focus on a offender-focused investigation. This is not about the victim, it's about the offender. And the conduct of the victim rarely should come into play. So I think these changes with Missoula were long overdue, and because of that, I believe both the University of Montana and the Missoula Police Department are doing a much better job in prosecuting and sexual assaults in the community.
Okay, and then as like a social and crim teacher, with the all the guests you get, like, do they talk about any of this kind of stuff, or like address anything like that to the kids?
We do, especially the last couple years. I've made it a point to have at least 3 guests that will focus on sexual assault, because it is indeed the most underreported crime there is. And often they're very, very tough cases. So officers will talk about how difficult it is when it is a figurative he said, she said, and what they're doing now to get more physical as well as circumstantial evidence. So from the detective standpoint, they talk quite a bit. From the prosecutor standpoint, again, you're seeing people that are much more trained to focus on special victims. And I think it's just a really important but uncomfortable message for obviously law enforcement to listen to women who are sexually assaulted, but also for people's peers and friends to understand some of the signs that a person is in a relationship that may include sexual assault. And it's important to recall or remember that sexual assault happens to unmarried or married people.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome.
So just to kind of wrap things up, I particularly really liked Mr. Fisher's statements on what he knows about it. I have taken his socio-crim class, and from experience, it was awesome. I think that anyone that is looking for a job in the law enforcement, that they should take that class because it's really interesting. Even if not, it's just helpful information. And I thought it was just interesting. We didn't go over into detail about rape situations. It was more like broad, but it was interesting to hear what he had to say on it, and it was very good. I also really enjoyed the book, and I thought that it was very well done, and there's just so many things that I didn't know about, so it was really helpful to hear it. I didn't know that there was this many rape cases. People would talk about it, but I didn't really, it's hard to believe until you hear it and you hear the person's story to really understand what they went through. I'm really happy that I read the book and got to listen to people's stories on what happened to them. And if you get a chance, I think that you should really read it, because it's a great book and it's in a town that you live in, so you should read about it and you should be informed about what's happening, whether or not you live here or you go to college here or somewhere else. It's just really helpful information to help prevent a situation or a bad situation from happening. Overall, I hope that you really enjoyed this podcast, and me, Kylie, and Jillian really thank you for listening and appreciate you taking your time to hear about a story or multiple stories that have happened in a town that you live in, and hopefully helps you to be more aware of, if you go to college here or somewhere else, that this information prevents something bad from happening. Anyways, this is your hosts, Bridget, Kylie, and Jillian. And till next time.